and friend in this particular instance, the one and only Chachi LePret.
Good morning, lady and gentlemen. How are you guys today on this Sunday morning?
Oh, wonderful. How are you doing, Chachi?
I'm doing great. It's a pleasure to be here and to speak to you, Renee. We're very excited to have you on the bill for our Big George show.
Yes.
And it's always a pleasure to be on Gary Levitt and Friends. So thank you for having me back on today on this Super Sunday.
It is Super Sunday, and it wouldn't be super if you weren't here, though. So we are glad that you took the time out.
Well, we're very busy. Now, yesterday we did a broadcast. I have a friend in Melbourne, Australia, named Plastic EP, and we've been hosting live shows for the last year or so during COVID. And yesterday afternoon, it's on my Facebook page right now, we interviewed Eddie Munster, Butch Patrick, for over an hour. That was a lot of fun.
Awesome.
I love the Munsters. The best television show ever. And Plastic EP and I have been doing shows for a while, so I wanted to throw that plug in, if I may. Thank you.
You certainly can.
That was a sensational interview.
Oh, thank you, Aaron. You heard that.
It was absolutely fantastic.
Can you tell our listeners how they can go back and listen to that? Is that okay? Will you do that?
Yes, you can find it at several places, Plastic EP TV on YouTube, on my Facebook page, Chachi LePret, LOPRETE. You'll find it there. And it was great. We had fun, and Aaron listened, apparently. So, and I enjoyed it because I'm a huge TV fan from back in those days of 1964. So that was a lot of fun. Thank you, Aaron, for that. And, I got to do a plug for our big George Harrison birthday show. It's called My Sweet George, a George Harrison 78th birthday celebration, a virtual fundraiser for the Regent Theater, Thursday night, February 25th at 7 p.m. I'll just run through these bands quickly. Ultrasonic Rock Orchestra, Adam Sherman, The Wellpennies, Thatcher Harrison, Field Day, Addie's Son, Sir Rachel, Duke Levine, and the Super Sounds of the 70s, Vance Gilbert, Gary Backstrom, Scott Erickson, Corin Ashley, and last but certainly not least, Renee and the Renegades. Yes, exactly. It's a fundraiser, a virtual fundraiser with a suggested donation, very, very cheap. And we know, you know, some people are out of work, and you can watch it for free if you'd like. So the Regent Theater, regenttheater.com. So now that I took care of business, should I get to my report, Mr. Gary?
Let's hear it, Chachi. We love this part of the show. We truly do.
Well, today is Super Sunday, but not for the reason that you in the studio might think. It was today, I don't know how old you are, Gary, but it was today, February 7th, 1964, 57 years ago today, the Beatles landed in the United States for the very first time. I was a young boy, about 7, 8 years old, and I was in tune to it. We had Meet the Beatles out there. I Want to Hold Your Hand was number one. And everybody wanted to see just who these Beatles were 57 years ago tonight. And, you know, the Beatles left London's Heathrow Airport. They had thousands of fans waving goodbye, wishing them well, because no British artist had never exploded in America. It was always in reverse. The British always had the American stars and their local musicians as well. But then the Beatles were very, very suspect about their success in America. Their manager would not go to America with the band unless they had a number one record, and they did, I Want to Hold Your Hand. So on board that plane, of course, were the Beatles and John with his wife, Cynthia, a bunch of members of the press, but a special guest flying that day with the Beatles was Phil Spector.
Oh.
Interesting little side note there.
Yeah.
And so the Beatles arrive in the United States. They land at JFK, and they look out the window, and there's 10,000-plus screaming fans arriving on Pan Am Flight 101 at about 1:30 in the afternoon, and the Beatles were totally blown away, and they were whisked off the plane into a large room for a Q&A with the press, and we're going to hear some audio momentarily from that, and you'll hear the Beatles PR guy screaming for everyone to be quiet so they could start the press conference. And the press were very skeptical. They were ready to just expose the Beatles for what they thought they were, you know, shallow, one-hit wonders. What are they doing here? You're never going to make it. But you know what? The press loved the Beatles. They found them smart, entertaining. entertaining, funny, engaging, and they just loved them. And at that time, Gary, you know, were you around February 7th, 1964? How old were you, Gary? I don't want to give you age.
No, that's okay. I am 60. I was around, and my brothers Larry and Kyle, I think I told you this before, Chachi, off the air, but we saw the first appearance with Ed Sullivan, and we had the bunny ears antennas on top of the TV, so my brothers pretended those were the microphones. And they were John and Paul, and I was always loving Ringo. In fact, if you get that Ringo interview for me, I'll give you $1 million. How's that?
Wow. I think that's a done deal. Renee, if you can verify that he does have $1 million, I might be able to get it done.
Yeah, $1 million. But,
now, back then, I Want to Hold Your Hand became number one, and it took off a song that was number one. It was a huge hit, loved by millions of fans even to this day. I'm kidding, of course. Bobby Vinton's There I've Said It Again was number one, and the Beatles removed that song from number one, and everything changed. The landscape of music changed. Capitol Records prepared for the Beatles' arrival. They had a $50,000 promotional budget. They made 5 million Beatles Are Coming posters distributed all over the country. Capitol Records made all of their employees wear Beatle wigs at work every day during that time. And that 1 year in 64, they sold, Capitol Records sold over 10 million Beatles records in that 1 year. The Beatles arrive in New York. They're at the Plaza Hotel where I interviewed Paul in 1986, thereabouts. They had a whole floor and fans were sneaking in, trying to get in to meet the Beatles. George was sick. He stayed in bed. He missed the run-through for the Ed Sullivan show. So they arrive on February 7th, today, 57 years ago. 2 days later, Gary's at home. I am in Cambridge watching on television. We're all watching this unbelievable appearance by the Beatles on the Ed Sullivan show. And Ed was very, very strategic. He could have just said, we're going to hold the Beatles till the very end. But he opened the show with the Beatles. They sang 3 songs. He closed the show with the Beatles. They sang 2 songs, 2 more songs, for a total of 5 songs in that 1 hour. So, Gary, wow. Renee, Aaron, and crew, we have some sound set up for you to play. It's a montage of audio, a couple of news reports from a very skeptical news anchors, and you're going to hear some sound from that press conference. So that's what we're doing today on Super Sunday, the day the Beatles landed in America, 57 years ago today. So there you go, Gary, Aaron, Renee, my Beatles report for this Super Sunday morning.
Excellent. Let's hear it.
American teenagers, well, 19 and 20-year-olds anyway, once helped repulse the British at Bunker Hill. But there's no indication that our teenagers are going to do it again. The British invasion this time goes by the code name Beatlemania. D-Day has been common knowledge for months, and this was the day. The invasion took place at New York's Kennedy International Airport.
Everybody!
Look, can we please have quiet?
Quiet, please!
Hey,
let the feasting begin.
Unless you keep quiet, we can't even have a present. Will you please shut up? Shut up.
Listen, I got a question here, very quick.
You
hope to get a haircut at all?
No.
Nope.
No, no, no.
I had one yesterday.
That's no lie.
That's true.
What do you think of Beethoven?
It's one over here.
Great. Especially his poems. I keep touching that guy today. I'm sick of that one.
What do you think your music does for these people?
No, well, it pleases them, I think. Well, they must do because they're buying it.
Why does it excite them so much?
We don't know, really.
If we knew, we'd form another group and be managers.
That's the way it is. Friday, February 7th, 1964.
The 4 English musical stars with their pudding bowl haircuts were greeted by about 4,000 shrieking teenagers at Kennedy Airport and mobbed by another large group of juveniles when they got to the Plaza Hotel. All day long, some local disc jockeys had been encouraging truancy with repeated announcements of the Beatles' travel plans, flight number, and estimated time of arrival. British journalists tell us that the record company had 16 press agents handling the arrival, but we wouldn't know much about that. However, like a good little news organization, we sent three camera crews to stand among the shrieking youngsters and record the sights and sounds for posterity. Our film crews acquitted themselves with customary skill and ingenuity. The pictures are very good, but someone asked what the fuss was about, and we found we had no answer. So, good night for NBC News.
16-year-old Lucy Baines, for one, might like to meet the British invaders. There's an unconfirmed report she'll be in the audience at a Beatle concert in Washington tomorrow night. Eric Severide will not be in that audience.
The British Beatles broke out here in New York on top of an epidemic of the part of the victims. The Beatles have drawn bigger and happier crowds than did President Johnson on any of his visits to New York City. They are living at the elegant Edwardian Hotel Plaza. Until now, the most precipitous action observed there has been the growth of the potted palms, and the plaza is taking it hard. The four Beatles wear what was described when women did it as the rusty hacksaw hairdo. They play electrified guitars, banjos, and other things. They also sing, but this is not regarded as essential because the bobby soxers in the audience provide most of the sound. Critics disagree as to whether their harmony is diatonic or pandiatonic. Political historians disagree as to their social significance. One school holds that they are an expression of isolationism from world affairs. In other words, Britain, fairly withdrawn into her island now, is behaving as we did in our isolationist 20s and 30s when we produced flagpole sitters and goldfish swallowers. Another school takes the view that the Beatles are a form of reverse lend-lease, done in revenge for the Americanization of England through Coca-Cola skyscrapers and horse operas. In these matters, Britain is currently enjoying a favorable balance of trade. Of 26 Broadway stage productions recently, 8 were predominantly British. There are rather few American actors working in London, and Actors' Equity wants a little more cooperation. The arrival of the Beatles suggests another matter for Anglo-American cooperation. Both countries have a society for the prevention of cruelty to children, as well as one for the prevention of cruelty to animals, but neither has a society for the prevention of cruelty to adults.
Thank you, Chachi. That was a great Beatles bit here this morning. Again, Chachi Lapret, of course, he is the guy that brings us the Beatles break every single Sunday morning. He does his Beatles breakfast all over New England, or breakfast with the Beatles. However, let's see. At this point in time, Renee, you're going to take it away.